Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
And we're joined today by Esther Walker. Hello, Esther.
Hi, here I am.
Hooray. Now, we're having a sort of a food special today, aren't we? Because would you describe yourself as a foodie?
No, I would never describe myself or anyone else as a foodie. But I do write about cooking and do quite a lot of cooking. Yeah.
Quite a lot. You've written a whole book about cooking, Esther. Don't be modest.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I still describe myself as a foodie. I think it's a really horrid word and it's really overused.
I don't think we'll be using it for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
Stop using the word foodie.
Yeah. Well, the book is called The Bad Cook. And yeah. I mean, it's quite self-explanatory. But yeah. What sort of was the ethos behind it?
I was a bad cook. And then I had to learn how to cook. But also, bad cook was also, you know, I'm a bad cook, but also, like, I'm a bad cook kind of thing. I mean, that's a bit pathetic, because obviously I'm not a bad cook, because I live in the suburbs and wear aprons and stuff and don't listen to rap. But there's the idea was that I was writing about food and cooking, but from a non-flowery apron, pastel, silicon utensil point of view.
So, sort of less Great British Bake Off, more... Yeah. Big massive fuck up.
Yeah, that was the idea behind Bad Cook. And then, you know, it was just about teaching myself how to cook and what works and what doesn't work, hopefully in a kind of non-patronising way, just because I've never been to cookery school, I've never worked in a restaurant. I just kept to cook for my husband and myself.
Yes, and you're a mother of two kids. So, tell us a bit more about your family.
So I'm married to Giles, mm-hmm. who is a restaurant critic and a journalist and a broadcaster. And I've got two children, Kitty, who is 4, and Sam, who is 21 months. Yeah, they're a couple of little lunatics, basically. I didn't really especially feel... I felt quite ambivalent about having kids. I wasn't really bothered one way or the other. But obviously my husband's a lot older than me, so I had Kitty when I was... Yeah, he was super keen. So I had Kitty when I was 30, and none of my friends had kids, so it was very awkward and weird and awful for a long time, and now they're all having children and I'm done and it's hilarious.
You're like the village elder now.
You're the one sitting with the Chardonnay going
well, you know, just planning my holiday to Antigua next year with both kids. So that's how that happened. But my sisters have a lot of kids between them. I've got a lot of sisters. I've got three sisters, and one's got 4 and one's got 2. So, and I didn't get on with anyone in my NCT class. They were all kind of crackers, or maybe I was the crackers one. I think that's probably what happened. And so my sisters were really kind of the people that I, you know, rang and just went, either is this normal or I think I'm going to throw myself onto the train. I just can't deal with this anymore. So that's my family. I'm not going to have any more kids. I might get a dog.
So you also have a blog, Recipe Rifle. Yeah. Is that the same kind of thing as the book? Is that?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it started off kind of as a kind of whimsical kind of la-la-la lifestyle blog. And then I realised that I just have no facility for that at all. I have no kind of aesthetic sense. I'm not interested in photographs or photography. My food always looks horrible, like dog food, but tastes nice. And so I thought, this isn't working. And so it took a while though. I think it takes a while when you're writing a blog to realise what it is you want to write about or who you are. And I realised quite quickly that I was sort of pretending to be someone I wasn't. So I started to write just about failure. And I write it about me being a failure and the failures in my life and how rubbish I am and how, you know, or basically my, I just wrote about my faults and my failures and about failures in cooking, and it was perfect. It was it felt completely real and natural. People quite liked it. And it, but it was confusing because at the same time as saying, I'm so terrible, I'm so rubbish, I'm so hopeless, I was saying, cook this, it's nice. And people were just like, is this a joke? And I'm like, no, it's not a joke. The recipes totally work. And the whole idea was, if I can do it, you can do it. Which is not quite right now, because as an accident of the blog, I am now a really good cook. So it's sometimes I disconnect from my readers slightly because I say, and then you just make a white sauce for six people and then add the broccoli and there you go. And I just think, actually, there are people there who, like 16-year-old students who don't know how to make a white sauce. There's a very handy section on my blog called How to Make a White Sauce.
So, there you are.
Google that, you know, dear exactly. listeners.
Put that in your box.
Problems and solutions. Weird.
I really like your blog. I like that the photographs are, like, realistic, because I'm a big Pinterest fan. And I spend a lot of time, like, especially when I'm up in the middle of the night breastfeeding, looking at all these idyllic pictures of, like, people. Like we were saying earlier, like the rainbow cake.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to make the rainbow cake. Mm. It was a disaster. Like, I lost the blue colouring and the purple colouring. So it was more like a sort of Rastafarian cake. It was just red, gold and green, and not very impressive shades of those colours. Just a total disaster. And I like your blog because it makes me feel better about that aspect of my life.
Yeah, definitely. The photos are basically your food. That's what your dinner's going to look like if you follow my recipe.
Because I love the tuna milk muffins.
Yeah, those
and
are amazing.
They just look like something I would like to eat. And I like how you wrote, it was the closest thing to McDonald's that I cooked in my house. I was like, I love this woman. Yeah. Not in a weird way, obviously. Yeah. You can still leave.
Not university.
No, that's right.
What are your favourite recipes on the blog? Or what have you had the most feedback about? What are the most popular ones?
Anything, well, it's a bit skewed, because anything by a really famous chef like Jamie or Nigella, basically, because people Google that. So if you put Jamie's chicken or Nigella's whatever in the thing, that's what gets read the most. That's what gets the most comments.
That's what we're missing in our promoting, isn't it? We should just call it Nigella's podcast.
Yeah. If you call it Nigella's Britney Naked podcast, then it'll just literally it's ridiculous. But the thing I've had most feedback, this is really pathetic, but the thing I've had most feedback on is how to do a baked potato properly, which is you take a baked potato, you prick it a couple of times, and you put it in your oven as high as your oven will go for 1 hour.
Oh.
And that is how you make the world's best baked potato. Mm. And I got, like, I got proper emails about that.
Tester.
It was extraordinary, yeah.
Do you oil and salt?
No.
Just bang it in.
Just a couple of holes, bang it in, 1 hour, as high as your oven will go.
And so are you a crispy outer skin?
Well, it depends how long you leave it in the oven for. But if you leave it in the oven, as I did with the baked potato the other day, for an hour and a half, it does get very crispy on the outside. But you know what? It's quite tasty.
I like that. Now I like it.
All right, take that home, listeners.
The takeout broccoli did quite well as well, which is how to do broccoli like it's a takeaway.
Yes.
Which is you do it, you don't boil it, you dry fry it in a pan, and then you add about 2 tablespoons of soy sauce and a teaspoon of honey, mix it around a bit. Take out properly.
That looks lovely. Yeah.
Can you do the last bit of the blog? Say it out loud.
The last bit of the blog.
Not on that the broccoli bit where you go ta f***ing da. My favourite.
Yeah. I've forgotten about that. Yeah.
You don't get that from Nigella, do you?
You're welcome. Ta f***ing da.
That's
so you mentioned Jamie and Nigella. Yeah. There are they like your favourites?
Jamie Oliver is basically he's really, really good. And he also has every single promising home economist working for him. So he's unstoppable. He turns out recipes that have been checked and double checked by millions of people. They're just brilliant. Nigella's a wonderful cook, but her recipes are occasionally not quite what I'm looking for.
Why?
Go on, say something bad about Nigella. Go on.
No, I would never say anything bad about Nigella.
But... Not and stay on this podcast, you wouldn't.
No.
Nigella and Cheryl Cole, we do not speak ill of them on the podcast.
Sorry, Cheryl
Hernandez Fassini, I beg your pardon. Please forgive me, Cheryl. Please forgive me. I'm sorry, Cheryl.
She's a big fan of the podcast, I believe.
She is, and she's also a beautiful angel sent to serve us, as I said before.
Yeah. Carry your luggage in her cabin of dimples. Nigella is brilliant, but she is in terms of pure practicality, Jamie Oliver, if anything you want to make Jamie Oliver's done a version. And it is just, I mean, it's a, he is a proper, he's an industry, whereas Nigella is more just a brilliant writer, a very compelling person. You're forced when you're writing cookbooks to be very, very creative and come up with your own original recipes, which is very, very, very hard. I don't do it. I can't do it.
No, no.
And I think in order to keep churning out cookbooks, you have to keep, you're forced to try and be really creative in a really, you know, in a slight, probably slight, quite hateful way. She's just a very brilliant, intelligent person, a brilliant writer.
You just want to hang out with her and smoke cigarettes and drink martinis.
She's very, 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 very compelling.
Lick her face. Something like that.
Steady now.
Yeah.
I heard that they don't write their own recipes though, Jamie and Nigella. I heard that they just have an army of people and they just kind of get the copy for approval now.
For Jamie Oliver turns out so many recipes that definitely it's not just him. Nigella, I don't know.
Who's your favourite, Helen?
I was going to say Jamie Oliver, because I think some of the recipes, like the way he does his chicken where you put the lemons in the, you know, in the centre bit. What's that bit called?
Cavity.
Yeah. Look. I'm a bit of a Delia fan, actually. I do like a Delia.
I find her just a classic. There's a smuggery there that get on board with.
I'm looking over there. You've got her books, Ellie.
I have, but I can't say I use them very often, to be honest.
I quite like it. I mean, she looks like she'd slap me on the bottom, though. Like, you know, she looks a bit...
You look like you'd like that. You're very sapphic today. I don't know what's got into you.
I don't know what it is.
Yes. You're sunshine.
You've been on the internet again. You've been looking at those videos.
Whoopsie. No, and I like Delia just for like the you know, the basics sort of thing. I quite like, it's a go-to, I think, how to bake bread or how to...
Oh, because you're always baking bread.
Oh, you know
you
me.
You never stop.
No.
Turn up with free ciabatta this morning, didn't you?
And the half dozen bagels. But yes.
But I think that the problem with Delia is that she doesn't give you much explanation as to why she's doing things.
No, there's no context.
You have to do it like this, because otherwise... And I think we're just used to a bit more feedback than that.
And I like Nigel Slater. How do you feel about Nigel?
Yeah, I really like Nigel Slater. Yeah. He's pretty good.
I like, because I think as well, like his food, it just feels like, I could feasibly make that for my dinner. Yeah. And it wouldn't matter if it didn't look like...
Yeah.
A beautiful shop window, you know. Yeah. It's just a bit of chicken, isn't it? It'd be fine.
Yeah.
I've been into Lorraine recently. You know, Lorraine Pascal.
She's very good. Yeah. How to Be a Better Cook is a very, very good book.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
And I cooked something out of ottolenghi the other day.
You did not.
I did so. I did.
Someone has actually made a Yotam ottolenghi recipe, listeners, and it's our Helen Thorne. Helen, how was it?
It was amazing. I cooked a... rich tomatoey barley
sauce?
risotto. And I had like lemon peel in it and lots of like oregano and lots of yummy things.
So basically, you have pomegranate molasses on it.
Yeah. No, but no. The funny thing
Zatar?
Was no, but it had a marinated
Ras al Hanout.
Ras al Hanout, yeah, exactly.
But it was delicious, and I made a marinated feta crumbly thing on the top of it. It was very nice.
So basically, you made a pizza with rice.
Yeah. Well,
the green pizza,
the holy trinity of my you know, my loves is a carbohydrate, a tomato. Thing and a cheese. So you've got your pasta, you've got your cheese on toast, your pizza, it's all, and your
That's
eggs.
Your three main food groups.
Yeah.
Joe's not keen on it, as you
no,
can hear.
He's going,
he's disagreeing.
Auntie
with
Helen,
that.
You are wrong. So is there anyone you don't like, Esther, or you think there's a bit overrated?
No one particular name springs to mind, but there were an awful lot of incredibly bad baking books that came out after, on the back of Great British Bake Off. It was just very cynical, I thought. And baking is very, very, very hard. And you have to be very, very precise and careful and have a lot of help if you're not like a natural baker.
Oh, yeah. You said that. I knocked out that Rastafarian cake in about half an hour. No worries. Fine.
But baking, there's a brilliant book. If you are interested in baking and you want to do more baking, Jane Hornby's What to Bake and How to Bake It is the only baking book you should buy. It's really, really brilliant. But there are lots and lots of others, and they teach you how to make donuts and, like, you know, some massive croque en bouche thing. And they're just really lazily done. The recipes haven't been checked. And yeah, I would line most of those up. I've seen a lot of those in the last 6 months, and I would line all of them up against the wall and
burn them.
Pelt them with them.
Pelt them with a dry muffin.
Yeah, yes.
I'm not a baker. I watch the Bake Off avidly, but I just sit there and go,
Oh, it looks like a lot of effort.
It does.
Why would you do that? Why would you do that? Go down Briggs. What's the matter with you?
Gales is very nice.
It's for a certain type of person, basically. It's for a very, very precise person who's very kind of neat and methodical as baking. That's what baking is for. That's the kind of person baking is for.
So they don't kill themselves. They can follow, you know,
they're very precise and they just like everything being nice and neat and tidy.
It's the blind baking that gets me.
Blind baking is a ball ache.
Isn't it?
Want anything as much as so much I have.
That's endlessly bumping into things and burning stuff you can't see.
Yay! Yeah. And do you have like a dinner party food, like that's something you would cook, like you go to?
This week I've got one dinner party tonight and I had one on Tuesday. I mean unheard of. Haven't had a dinner party for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And then I've got two in 1 week. So I will run you through my menus if you like.
Yes, please do.
Tuesday, they're all available on blog.
Mm-hmm.
On Tuesday, for a starter, I did ceviche, which was yummy. Ceviche. Ooh. With kind of like nacho crackers things.
Like a tuna or like a white fish? Or
it was a haddock, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, it was haddock. I was quite surprised about it. I went to my fishmonger and I said, what's the freshest thing? And he said, haddock. And I said, can I do that on a ceviche? And he went, if you like. I said, okay, I'll have some then. And it was incredibly expensive.
Yeah, but you could have said, can I make that into a smoothie? And he'd go, yeah, fine. 10 quid.
Exactly. No, but it was great, actually. It has to be very, very fresh. I mean, ceviche always has to be. You basically don't make ceviche unless you live next to a fishmonger. If you live next to a fishmonger, make the ceviche. If you cannot get fish that was caught that morning, do not make ceviche.
Yuck.
There's no point.
No.
And then we had an aromatic pork belly stew by Hugh Bunny, which is quite unexpected. Not like a kind of, you wouldn't think of giving that at a dinner party, but it was actually really brilliant because you just stick it in the oven for ages. Yeah. And then, you know, go and do your hair or wipe up some sick or something. And then everyone arrives and it's all. And then for pudding, I did Queen of Puddings, Delia.
Oh.
Yeah, and that was good. That all worked fine. And then tonight we are having smoked salmon like skewers. So you just buy a packet of smoked salmon and you cut it into strips and you kind of concertina it onto the end of a skewer.
Well, like a sort of ribbon effect. Exactly. Like, very nice. Yes.
And then you arrange it around a plate and then you put over lots of lemon, pepper, sour cream, capers.
Oh.
Tastes two sex.
Gorgeous. Great.
Looks amazing.
That'd be a nice Christmas morning canapé, yes. I feel like, yes. With the champagne.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It's just good. Like women's hour, isn't it?
It is.
No one has to butter a load of bread.
Wicked.
So, oh, yeah, so that's... And also, it's not kind of heavy. It's not greasy or fatty, you know. And then it's a roast chicken, boring, but I've got someone pregnant coming and she's really gone off everything else I was going to cook.
You cannot eat lamb when you're pregnant.
Yes, I was going to make a tagine. Bop. I was going to make a tagine and she said, I've really gone off lamb. And I went, okay, we're not having the tagine. We're going to have roast chicken with... sage butternut squash, which is really good and incredibly easy to do. You get a butternut squash, you chop it up thinly, slice it thinly, which is a bummer.
You need a cleaver. Do you cleaver it?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
great. A big glove. I've got a cleaver. Wham. Wicked. Yeah. Good. Good afternoon.
Yeah.
It's boring to do, but it works really well, and it's quite low maintenance thereafter.
Yeah.
So you slice your butternut squash thinly. You layer it on a baking sheet with onion, like layers of onion. Salt, pepper, lots of olive oil, lots of sage leaves. Sage leaves in the olive oil so they don't burn while they're cooking.
Oh.
Lay all that together, bung it in the oven for like an hour more. It doesn't really matter. Take it out when it starts to look burnt. And also like a red cabbage fennel slaw. Ooh. Which you can make ages in advance, so you don't have to come.
Yeah, you want that. You want it to be a little bit droopy and sucked up there.
Yeah, you want it to get... And I do Jamie Oliver's winter coleslaw, which is amazing.
Is that the pomegranate-y one?
Yeah, the pomegranate minty,
yes,
yogurt-y,
yes,
one.
Yes,
very,
yes.
Very, very, very good. And it means you don't... means it's you're having a roast without the kind of timing panic of having lots of different veg at the same time.
That's a ball egg. And then you get your limp beans.
You get your grey broccoli and your limp beans. It's really bad. And then for pudding is profiteroles. This is actually not a very good dinner party planner for anyone who doesn't have like loads of time on their hands, basically. But you could do something else. The one on Tuesday was actually quite time friendly. You could do most of it in advance. But yeah, I've never made profiteroles rolls before. I'm looking forward to them.
Oh, wow. Me neither. I probably never will. Let's
so you're
honest.
Having people over, but like yeah. when you go to other people's houses, yes. you know, because Giles being, yeah. you know, Mr. TV yeah. food critic, how are the Corkers or the Walkens received?
We're never invited to anyone's
house. No, I was going to ask. It's like, oh no, Giles Corrin is coming. Yeah. People just shit their pants.
I think they just don't invite us.
Yeah.
We get invited by... genuinely, people don't invite us around for dinner. I don't think... I'm not sure how many people do invite each other around for dinner, though. I'm not sure how many dinner parties of a given evening are actually happening.
Mm, yeah.
We get invited round by a friend of ours called Henry Dimbleby, who is a cook and doesn't care what Giles thinks either way.
He's so,
He's the Leon bloke. And you just go around his house for dinner and he's not bothered either way, so it's fine. Or when we get invited around by very smart people who either have their own cooks or get it catered. Mm-hmm. So they don't care either way either what happens. But our kind of most rich, terrifying friends are the only people who invite Giles around for dinner.
Yeah.
And of course, Giles is in the food, I can't remember the name of it, the food history programme with Sue Perkins.
Supersizers Go.
So that's
its catchy name.
Yeah. I love that. But does he ever like come home from a day of filming going, right, I require turtle soup and, you know, roast swan.
He wouldn't get very far if he did.
Yeah. No. He sort of come back from anything and gone, oh, actually, that's
yeah,
really
he,
nice.
He does, yes. He went away. He recently did a programme called Giles Corrin's Hunger Games or what Giles Corrin Eat to Live Forever or something. It's out quite soon. And he went to America to investigate different kinds of diets. And he came back declaring that our children needed to eat more offal.
Oh.
And I went, yeah, good luck. And then he made them like offal burgers. And they both really loved them. So.
Really? What, like with heart and
heart,
and
yeah.
Guts.
He made them, technical terms, faggots. He made them out of heart and liver and just some like other burger meat and seasoning and stuff, and they're actually really, really tasty. Sam loves them.
So
Sam,
like, good for you though.
Yeah. I think they are reasonably good for you. But so yeah, he did paleo diet, he did like a raw food diet, and he did like a fruitarian diet. And so yeah, I mean we kind of take the piss and say, oh, you know, neither of us have any opinions, we don't care, we hate food, it's all just like, it's all just bollocks, we're all pretending. But actually we do both think about food quite a lot, and he definitely does. And he doesn't eat processed food like ever.
Yeah, like, so can you explain, I think I might have misunderstood this, right, but I've been reading a lot recently, especially on Pinterest, about clean eating, right, which is this new like trend that seems to be coming up in America. And I might have it wrong, but as far as I can understand it, clean eating is just like not eating loads of shit, like, you know? It's just like actually cooking some
yeah.
food.
Yeah.
Like you can eat meat, you can eat cheese, you can. Right. It's basically just as long as you don't put corn syrup in it.
Yeah.
That's clean eating. is that your understanding of it? Have I got it wrong?
I've never heard of that before, but I think I don't think you properly appreciate how bad North American diets are. Like, for example, the Spanish don't think of ham as meat. So on Spanish menus, vegetarian options will have ham in them. In America, exactly, they got the right attitude. I'm moving there tomorrow. But in America, they simply don't understand what cooking from scratch means. But not all over America. In some parts of North America, they don't. I think it's some parts of England as well.
Mm.
So clean eating for them, that's great. I mean, it's. I think that the one thing North America can do to stop from just collapsing and eating itself is to sort out their diet.
I thought, well, I feel better.
Yeah, yeah. So have you got a food that is a deal breaker with like friends and or partners? Not that you've got lots of partners, but like you know,
not
you know,
anymore.
No. But I was going to say, like, you know, when you love a food so much.
If
like...
Giles didn't eat coriander, we couldn't be married.
Correct.
Yeah. My sister does not eat coriander, and so we can never get married.
No.
My husband doesn't eat parsley, but I found that out too late. And my marriage is a sham now. It's a hollow shell.
Parsley's basically the other one.
Mm.
Yeah, well, this is the thing that's annoying as well. He claims he's allergic to parsley.
No, he's not. He's not. He just doesn't like it.
Exactly. And he claims it makes his mouth all tingly, and it's like... But like he'll eat it if it's cooked into something. Or the other day,
what a surprise! Yeah.
Put in bolognese.
He was like, "That ham looks nice." And I was like, "That's a parsley sauce." And he's like, "Yeah, I'd probably eat that."
Is that Fergus's?
Drives
ham
me
and parsley sauce
nuts. Ugh. Yeah, it's fictional allergy. What's your deal breaker?
I was going to say ham, but it's a slightly mean thing because I do have some dear vegetarian friends. But there, I remember
in Spain. It's a vegetarian item.
I know. They just need to go to Spain.
They just need to go to Spain.
But when Ellie and I first met, she told me that she bought a ham knuckle at the supermarket and then sat in the car and ate it.
Really?
And I was like, I really
with
like this.
With my fingers.
Yeah, yeah, I really like but, this lady.
It wasn't raw.
No.
No.
What do they do? Oh, I see.
Like just... a cooked ham. Like a cooked
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so at Sainsbury's in Sydenham down the road, you can buy like these. Like that, yeah. These, yeah. Yeah, really fatty. Oh, God, I want one now.
Yeah. Yeah, like a
and
ham
it was that thing. It was, like, yeah, like, it was when Charlie was quite little, I think. Yeah. I was up all night breastfeeding. You know, you wake up and you're so hungry.
And you suddenly got to quarter to 12 and you're like,
I'm going to gnaw on bones in my car in a car park. That's where I'm at in my life. That's what's happening. Yeah.
So I think rather a deal breaker, it was an enhanced, you know, I was like, I really like Ellie. She's funny, but I really like her now because she eats ham bones in a car.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit of a deal breaker. That love of ham, like opening the fridge door and just carving off a slice and eating it while still at the door.
I think just liking food, I think, is quite important. I can't really get on with people who don't eat very much. Mm. I don't want to make out like I'm just like, oh yeah, you know, because there's some girls who kind of say, because I'm quite slim, so I don't want to say, oh God, yeah, I just eat so much. I just eat all the time. It's just all eating to cover up the fact that I'm just bulimic.
You've had 8 packs at Quavers while we've been recording.
But I can't stand that. I can't stand people who are either like, oh yeah, God, I'm just such a pig. I just eat well. I'm just so hungry all the time. And you're like, you're not. You're lying to me because you're 8 stone and your metabolic rate's not that high.
Mm.
But I can't really get on with people who don't... who pick at their food. You know, when you're really people who just get really hungry and just like, I've just got, you know, people who just kind of get hungry and eat food and then kind of stop when they're full. I think that's sort of normal.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah. I mean, Pete would argue that I probably take it too far. Like, I will spend quite a long time cooking a really nice meal and then sit down to eat it. And when I'm eating it, I'll open a recipe book and, like, start reading. And he's like, what is wrong with you? That's like, you know, having sex and watching porn.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you've never complained about... No, anyway. so, not really. Pete's work makes into this.
Not since university.
But yeah, food, like, takes up an awful lot of my... brain time.
Mm. Yeah.
You can tell how much by the way I talk now.
That's it.
I'm not sure I could cope with being married to someone who wasn't interested in it at all.
No, it would be really, really hard because you would just think, what's wrong with you?
Mm.
We once lived with a guy who couldn't eat food if he didn't put Heinz ketchup on the top.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
There was this moment, like, we lived with another couple and she made him a Thai green chicken curry. Oh, and then he just went to the fridge and he just went,
and she just went, that's an affectation.
See, I could not even look at him.
Yeah, but no, Giles and I are actually quite weirdly on the same level about food. Like, we will both definitely, some evenings we'll just look at each other and be like, kebab?
Yes,
kebab. And we're on this, you know, and that is quite odd. And also we're on the same kind of sleeping schedule as well, and I think in order for a marriage to work, that's quite key. You've got to basically get tired at the same time and basically want to eat the same things.
I think, yeah, Pete and I do love a takeaway. I think that's the glue that holds our marriage together, basically Pizza Hut.
Listen, there's marriage is based on less. I wouldn't worry about it. That's fine. That's just fine.
And have you got like a feedback rule for him? Like if you cook him something...
He's not allowed to write a column about it.
I
will know what I've done wrong. If something's gone wrong, I will know.
Yeah.
And he is, he's very, very helpful and gives good feedback. He's never rude. He's not flippant. But also Giles will eat anything.
That's good.
He's not bothered. You know, yeah. I have served him some, when I was still learning how to cook, I served him some, I think, frankly, dangerous things. Like chicken that was sort of like raw in the middle, and he would just eat it and just go, yeah, good. Different temperatures. Have you done that?
I love these quail lollies.
I love this bloody bit in the middle. It's so yummy.
I've never had chicken tartare before. Yeah. How avant-garde. Yeah, see, Pete, I think, tries... as is often the way, tries to be helpful, but then isn't. Like, so, because I'm very self-critical of the stuff I eat. If I've made something really nice, I'm fine. I can be like, yeah, I like that. That's good. I'll make that again. But quite often I'm like, oh, there's too much salt in this, or there's not enough lime, or I wish I hadn't put that in. And he'll go, no, come on, you know, who cares? Anyway, food's just fuel. It doesn't really matter. I don't really care what I put in my mouth. And then I get like... I spend my whole week thinking of nice things to put in your mouth. What are you talking about? It's just fuel. It's not just fuel. This is my life. And then we have a little row.
Well, I think you spend all week thinking of nice things to put in your mouth, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is absolutely true. I never ever consult him on what we're going to eat. No. He just goes, what are we having to dinner? We're having this. Yeah.
That is really, he's really lucky.
What's Will's there? How does Will...
Oh, he's very... vocal in his feedback for me. And do you know what he likes to do if I'm just like cooking some onions? Just stand over me, not saying much, and then he might suck his teeth going, you know, maybe not that hot, or
I couldn't do that.
Yeah, he has nearly been stabbed in the stomach. So I just wanted to check what a real food critic was like to live with.
He doesn't do that anymore. He did once upon a time. Like, he sometimes interferes with how I'm cooking and makes me really angry, because I just go, I am better at this than you are. Sorry.
Pete once, right, I think, I don't know, see what you think. Pete once rearranged my kitchen cupboards.
What? Did he do that?
And I went absolutely...
Why did he do that?
He thought he knew of a more sensible, practical, logical... place to put the different ingredients, even though he never cooks a meal, which is I'm fine with. That's the deal. I like to cook. I cook, he clears up, that's fine. But the person who cooks, I feel, should get to decide where the ingredients live.
That is weird boy logic.
It's amazing we're still together.
The parsley.
What am I doing here? Helen, can I come stay at yours for a few weeks? Oh, and of course with Will there was the pasta incident.
What's that? Oh yeah, he came home from work once and went, oh no, not pasta again.
Giles did that to me once. He said, what's for dinner tonight? And I said, Spanish omelette. And he went, oh, okay, can I not have any potatoes in my half? And I went, I tell you what, I said, I'm not going to do a Spanish omelette. And I made a dinner consisting of all the things I know he doesn't like. So there you go, darling.
There we are.
What do you think would go best with this?
Yeah.
A bit of sherry, wine.
Yeah. It's a Heinz salad cream and ketchup dip.
Yeah. I know, yeah, Will says, it's like, stuff food's a bit carb heavy, Helen. I was like,
yeah,
okay.
Is it really?
Is it? Yeah.
I think you're a bit of a dick.
Yeah. I said that in my mouth and in my head.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, let's round off the food chat then with what is your desert island dish?
Do you want to do the music?
You do it, darling. You do the music so well, wonderfully. Go on. Excellent.
Kirsty.
Well.
Today I'm joined by someone you've never heard of because we've run out of famous people. You once invented paint. Tell us about your favourite Diana Ross record. Anyway, so what would be your desert island dish?
What criteria are we basing this on? The thing that it's been most practical use, or the thing that I would like to have the most with me?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. What's your favourite? Oh, like, right. You know.
It's clam linguine that my husband makes for me on Saturday night.
Oh, every Saturday night.
Every Saturday night, yeah.
Oh, I want
to see. Let's just hop over to Esther's on a Saturday
really,
night.
It's really, 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 really great.
Oh, is it like that Il Vongolo, whatever it's called?
Linguini al Vongole.
Yes, al Vongole.
Vongole.
Vongole is just Italian.
I lived in Venice for 3 months and I had a lot of that.
I thought you said I lived in Vongole. It's a little town just off the coast of Brisbane.
That's right. Yeah, just near Trieste. Oh, yum. That's
nice. And it's really quick. With lots of parsley and chilli and garlic and linguine and clams that we get from the farmer's market.
And, she's a foodie.
Yes, disgusting foodie. She stabbed me. And he makes it and it's really quick and it's just it's the one pasta meal we have a week because we're so pathetic and it's just really super, super, super nice.
Does he put any wine in it or anything?
It's a bit of wine at the end, just kind of whatever's knocking about.
Oh, right, so not like
your Pinot Gris, your Grigio,
Piat d'Or, Bailey's at a push.
Yes.
Suave.
Sometimes Sherry works fine. Ricard. Cook it off, basically, so it's,
Do you eat and watch telly at the same time?
Oh, yes.
Hooray!
There's a small debate about whether to eat at the table or eat in front of the telly. It really depends on how rocky the evening's been up to then. Mm. Like, if the kids have been a bit difficult or, you know, there have been phone calls, and we haven't kind of settled down to dinner for a while, then often we'll just hit the telly straight away. But, you know, we quite often we'll sit at the table together and just complain about the kids, basically.
Oh yeah,
for a bit, and then go and watch telly.
Oh god, and then he did this thing, so annoying. And then she said it was so rude. Yeah, you've got to debrief.
You do have to defrag
at the end of the day.
Defragmentation. Yes,
absolutely.
So,
what about you then, Ham? What's your desert island dish?
I like salt beef.
Do you?
I really got salt beef with a mustard sauce.
Oh.
And some nice potatoes.
Like, do you make it yourself?
My mum makes it. And we call it corned beef in Australia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But corned beef is a different thing here.
Oh, okay.
But a really nice salty salt beef.
How do you make it then?
You boil it.
It's salt.
No, it's a salted beef and then you boil it and it's really yummy and then you make a white mustard sauce.
You can have with all sorts of kind of garnishes and pickles and stuff. Yeah. Sauerkraut, it's really nice.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Have you been to Gabby's Deli near Leicester Square?
No.
I will take you there and buy you a salt beef sandwich and you'll want to stay married to me, it'll be nice.
Obviously. Ellie, my love.
Mine is probably, it's a bit boring, mine's probably spaghetti carbonara.
Oh, yes.
Because I don't make it with cream or onions or anything.
No.
I've spent many years perfecting, like, fry the garlic off first and then chuck it out so you don't get burny garlic.
That's what Gennaro.
Who?
Gennaro. Thank you.
Gennaro? That's a drink, isn't it?
Jamie Oliver's best friend.
Oh, Gennaro Contaldo?
Yeah, that's what he said, fry the garlic and then I just eat it. Buttery fried garlic. Oh, God, love it. Oh,
and then really, really good pancetta. None of this Cubetti de Sainsbury's nonsense.
No.
I'm talking the trows. And then just like eggs and really good parmesan and nothing else. But I've perfected that crucial moment of pouring the egg in at the right moment so it doesn't go scrambly.
Yes, yes.
But it's not
silky,
too...
silky egg. Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm quite proud of
that. And do you do extra parmesan on the top?
No. Just keep it in the sauce. Yes, yeah, you
nice.
Know. I sometimes do the Nigella trick of sloshing a bit of noili par.
Oh yes,
in with the pancetta and boiling off the alcohol. That's quite nice.
Mm.
But yeah, there you are.
I think we're all aroused now.
Really hungry. Oh, well, there we are. That's food chat. Do you want to introduce the next section, Helen?
Okay. Well, the next section is book chat.
Book chat.
Book chat. Esther has written two books. Yeah. Bad Mother. And Bad Cook, The Bad Mother, and That Bad Cook.
Yeah.
So, now I finished a book last night at about 11:30 in the evening. It's great.
Which one?
The Bad Mother.
What was your takeaway, Helen?
Oh, well, my favourite section was when you talked about being pregnant with your second child, and there's a quote in it saying you were in a white carb and telly tailspin.
White carb telly tailspin, yeah.
That's one of my favourite quotes from a book ever, because I was like, I could see that tailspin. Yeah. I've been in that tailspin.
Bad. It was bad. Kitty had... frozen chicken nuggets and chips for lunch, and I think sometimes also for dinner.
Yes.
Every day for a while. It was really like desperate. Mm. It was so bad.
It's the most tired you were ever like
it was,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just completely neglected Kitty. I mean just major, just like it's good that she's incredibly independent, and I mean she is now. But yeah, no, Bad Mother was also written in a real like dark, like Eye of the Storm. Sam wasn't walking.
There was a little bit of rage. I feel
a lot of rage.
There was a lot of rage, but I often think that's when the best.
I couldn't write it now.
No.
I wouldn't
know
what to say. I'd be like, yeah, it's all right. Kids are quite sweet, aren't they? They grow up. It's all right in the end. So it was quite. I think it was sort of critical that I wrote it when I was, you know, basically hating every single moment of my
life. But that's when you actually turn to a book, though, which I think I think that's good, because I remember feeling a lot of those things you talked about you know, what other mothers think of you, how you're judged, how tired you are, the impact of children on your relationship, me time, all those sort of things, which are the hard, you know, they're your black times. That's when you really, you're going, why the f*** have I had kids?
Yeah, what have I done?
Everything, you know, my body's funny, my boobs are hurty, my friends are c***s.
My husband's so much, I just want to stab him all the time.
Sometimes I would lie awake thinking how I would kill him.
Yeah.
But now it's fine.
It gets better.
I even like him on the weekends. Like, it's really, it's great.
I like to think I've peppered it with a tiny bit of, like, hope. not all just awful.
But it's really important, because it's not a lady in her 50s in a neat cardi and goes, what do you need to do? Don't worry, just get on. Yes, that's right. It'd be fine. Because that's what you need. You need the honesty and the brashness, because it is, it's messy and yucky and hard but
it's not you. It's not just you. It's not you. It's not your fault. It's nothing that you've done. Mm. And I think women quite often come to that conclusion on their own. They go, it's crap, but you know, at some point it'll stop, because they talk to other women. I think husbands have a hard time seeing their way through the gloom. I mean, some women get lucky with a really upbeat husband who's just like, it's all right, look, it's just a process. They get to 18 months, they'll be walking, it'll be okay. But some women have husbands who are just like, this is crap.
Yeah, or that line.
When's it going to end?
Or, you know, you wanted that baby.
Yeah,
that I've heard that, obviously, but you know, but that you end up getting a third child too, because some husbands, you know, behave very badly.
Definitely.
Or partners or whatever.
Definitely, they can't. So. It sends everyone, but like little, like small children send everyone completely crackers.
Yeah.
Everyone.
And what I liked about your book too is that you provided a context for the book and about your own, how you were parented and breastfed. And I was like the opposite. My mum was very rules based.
Mm.
Everything was clean and neat. Yeah. Dinner times were very strict. And
I dreamt about living in that kind of house.
Now I think I turned into your mother, and it was really interesting going, because I was like, my mum was always cleaning and always like the dinner table would be beautifully set. Mm. And then everything was just, we lived in the vicarage.
I think I've turned into your mother.
Yeah.
And so, I wanted, with that, really, I wanted people to think about their own childhoods and how, what they've experienced is really important. Because if you don't think about why you're doing the things, why you're compelled to do the things, the seemingly crazy things that you're doing.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going round and round in circles going, why am I so crazy? Why am I so disorganised? Why am I so shit? Why am I contriving to make everything really chaotic?
Yeah.
Just think about your own childhood and think about why you're doing the things that you're doing.
No, and what I like about it, what's really reassuring, is that you're not consistent. You're very open about, you're saying, well, I like the structure here, but I chew my son's own food.
Oh, God. I forgot about that.
I love that. I was like,
what's that?
I used to chew up Sam. Sam's got some chewing problem. He still does. He's not very good at chewing his own food. And when he was little, when I was weaning him, he was probably about 6 months old, and I wanted to give him and Kitty the same food. And so I would just give Kitty whatever, and then I would chew it up for Sam and just feed it to Sam. And
like a bird,
you know, there's your tea. And if you'd told me with Kitty to do that, I would have gone, I'm sorry, I'm not that kind of mother. I'm just, you know, yuck, I'm not some disgusting hippie. Thank you very much. But with Sam, I just thought, this is the way, I've got to do this.
My second child is now 3 and a half, and I feel like we're just in the clearing. Like, and it's, when they just get that a bit older, you do emerge from the fog and you go, oh, I was there.
I'm a much better mother to my children now that they're a bit older.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's good too, because there was this trend, I feel, for a long time, that these really overly sincere mothering books and the way motherhood has become so, I don't know.
Fetishized.
Yeah, that's it. And now it's nice that there's a bit of backlash to that people are actually saying, no, it's really hard, it's really shit. We don't hate our children.
No.
It's just really hard just and not, horrible
they're not
someday.
A lifestyle choice. You know, children are not an accessory. Children are completely, they are wild animals. Mm. Literally, they are wild animals. And having them in your life in this country where we're so rich and so spoiled and so just like used to doing whatever we want and then Instagramming it.
Yeah.
Then a baby arrives and you just go, hang on a sec. This is just, I'm not having fun.
No.
What's going on?
Are there any parenting books that you have found helpful?
I've read them all pretty much. And there's something to take away from all of them, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. I think people say, hey, don't read any book. No, read them all. Either read none or read all of them.
Yeah.
Because there will be something useful somewhere. And you can, you know, unless you're just a complete idiot, you can pick your way through them and think. I mean, the people I've spoken to who've said, oh, but I read this book and it told me to do this, I've always thought they're a bit dim. And I've sort of thought, you genuinely can't read another book. Read a different book. Read a book that agrees with you or that you agree with, and then you'll be friends and it'll all be fine.
Mm.
So yeah, I totally over-intellectualised the process and read pretty much everything. But I enjoyed it. Yeah.
I especially enjoyed reading the Tiger Mother book because I was like, oh, I'm not doing that.
Well, you know, you're just not that kind of mother. You just think, oh, not for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It seems very heavy on the admin, the Tiger Mothering. I mean, there's not a lot of... And you sit down, eat biscuits and watch Facebook while your kids watch a DVD. Yeah.
No, you do that. It's just when they play the violin for 18 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I think mothering and that kind of over-scheduling and over kind of achievement mothering are basically covering up for the fact that they find their kids really boring. I mean, the stuff that Kitty comes out with is absolutely... I don't know what she's talking about half the time. She goes, and do you know, the octopus one didn't have another arm? And just like that. Yeah. And then like that for quite a long time. And I just think, right, I'm just going to sit here and listen to it and go, mm-hmm, really? Yeah. And then what happened? Just, it was fluent bullshit coming out of her mouth. But I can quite see if you were a different type of person, you'd just be like, I can't deal with this. I can't deal with having to engage with you and your crazy stuff. Yeah. We're so busy. We're just so busy. People for whom being so busy is just such a major... I'm never busy. I'm never doing anything. I don't do anything. And I think that's probably... Actually, it's probably not that great, to be honest with you, but... but certainly,
You've written two books.
Kitty has to make her own fun. Kitty has to make her own fun.
So your books are called The Bad Mother and The Bad Cook.
Yeah. And you can read it on your Kindle or on your phone or on your computer. You just can't read it as an actual book.
It's just like they're e-books.
It's e-books only. You cannot buy them in a shop.
Oh, well, what have we done, Helen?
Crack that nut, Ellie. Now our listeners have written in to talk about their scummy eating. I'll just quickly mention, this one is a personal favourite from Leah Henry. She says, a Dairy Lee triangle wrapped in a corn ham slice. A slaggy canapé, if you will.
Oh, I like that bit. No, the corn bit makes me unwell.
It's like an Atkins snack.
So yeah. Leah also writes a few minutes later, in fact, I write a vegetarian food blog, so this is really bad PR for me. Should have kept my mouth shut. No, don't keep your mouth shut, Leah Henry. And someone talks about Angel Delight. That's Claire Moore.
Gemma, which flavour? Did she mention the flavour?
No, she does not. And Claire Palmer writes that she was at a middle-class campsite and our kids were the only ones eating pot noodles by the campfire.
Oh,
that's great. Thank
hilarious.
You. I love pot noodles.
Yeah, nothing wrong with pot noodles.
Oh,
except the way it tastes.
Yeah.
And what's in it.
Think about it.
And the whole concept.
Sometimes I really crave a chicken pot noodle. I really like it. And Hannah Saunders, who's been on the podcast before, actually, Big Fish, Little Fish podcast, she said she once ate a pot noodle on the sofa while watching EastEnders with her daughter. Her daughter's 4.
No, I've given it. Kitty and I have eaten a pot noodle together before.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. No, it's just, I mean, not like every day, but it's not poison.
No.
It really isn't. It's fine. Like,
well, I think Gwyneth would have something to say about that. That's all I can say. No. Here's another one from our reader, Gwyneth in Los Angeles. She likes to see how many mini baby bells she can shove in her mouth at one time. Wax still on. So, thanks, Gwyneth.
She's good for food and for vaginal care, I believe, yeah. Gwyneth. That steaming. Was steaming. Goodness.
Steaming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like mine fried, personally. and Katie Jackman writes, a nice Greg's sausage roll is a must when we go shopping. And when we go past Greg's, KFC, Macca's, etc., we let out a loud, mmm. Thank you, Katie Jackman. Thank you, listeners. And we are your people.
Yeah, we had someone come to our show. One of our confessions they wrote was the Greg sausage roll, or as I like to call it, the Lewisham dummy. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, lovely listeners, for sharing your scummy food confessions with us. And now it's time for some other confessions, isn't it, Helen?
That's right. We're now...
Yeah, that's Joe's.
Esther, would you like to kick us off?
I'm racking my brain. I can't think of anything especially scummy that I've done, but my husband, when either of my children have a cold, my husband sucks the snot out... sucks the snot out of their noses with his mouth. and so he does spit it out.
Yeah, no, that's key.
That's probably the most disgusting.
Oh, I think the spitting out is almost worse. But, like, does he have a spittoon? Like, what does he do?
Spits it out the front door. Spits it into the thing.
That is a cultural thing, though. Apparently, that
I will wipe their. I pick my kids' snot out of their nose and like wipe it on things.
Yeah,
like on the side of the bed, on the back, car.
Look, other side of the cushion on the couch.
On the side of the cushion, and it's on the carpet.
And it's a depository for a bogey.
That is my most scummy thing.
Yeah,
I think. Wiping snot.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe, for that contribution.
We haven't had a fart on the podcast before.
Oh, we have now. That's a good one.
I might follow the theme with the husband doing gross things. I had a sore throat the other night, and I said, "Will, just get me a glass of water and a paracetamol." And it was dark, and he just got a cup from the bathroom and gave me some paracetamol. And in the morning, I looked down, and the cup was the toothbrush cup.
Oh,
they had some old toothpaste
limescale
sediment.
That's
still revolting.
Isn't it? I felt very ill. And he's like, "Oh, what?" It was like nighttime. I was like, "It's still yucky." Oh. So I was cross.
Yeah, that is really disgusting.
Very cross.
Yeah.
So what have we got left, Helen? That's it.
That we've come to the end. So thank you, Esther Walker.
Thank you for having me.
Buy her books on Amazon.
Buy them now.
The Bad Mother, the Bad Cook. Look at her blog. It's great. Subscribe. I have.
It's reciperifle.blogspot.com.
Fantastic. And
are you on Twitter?
Yes, @ Esther Walker.
Excellent. And we're on Twitter, aren't we, Helen?
We are. We're @ Scummy Mummies. We're on Facebook, Scummy Mummies Podcast. And we're also going to be live. We will be doing a show at the Ivy House in Nunhead in London on the 7th of May for election night.
And if you want tickets to the Ivy House gig, just go to wegottickets.com and just like search for Ivy House election night. And it's £8.50 in advance or £10 on the door.
Excellent. Great. Well, I think we've done. We've done food. We've done chat. That's it, really.
Yes. Thank you very much, Esther, for being a fantastic guest.
Thank you for having me.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.
So there you are.
So Esther has a book and she's got a blog, but what doesn't she have, Ellie?
I've no idea what you're talking about.
A theme tune.
Oh, no.
I don't have a theme tune.
You don't want one.
Well, she has a fab blog and she's written some books and her first name is Esther. Esther Walker. She's a mother and a lover of food. She's cooking recipes for her family and her famous hobby, TV Dude.
Was that supposed to be to the tune of Love Shack?
Yes.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.